Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Devin, and I'll be your host for our weekly Global Awakening Call. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. The purpose of these calls is to share stories, to tell stories, stories that help us plant seeds for a more compassionate society. And along the way, we love the journey of transforming ourselves from inside as well. We do this by holding collective conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life, speakers and people that inspire us through their actions to live in a more service-oriented way. And behind each of these calls is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allows us to hold this space. Today, our special guest speaker is none other than Carolyn Gable, and someone who really embodies today's theme of tapping into one's personal toolbox. Thanks again for joining today's call. Let us start with a minute of silence to anchor ourselves. A minute of silence, please. Welcome again to our weekly Awakening Call. Today, in conversation with Carolyn Gable. As we get started, let me explain the flow of our call today. In a few minutes, our moderator, Rahul Brown, will engage in a deep dialogue with our speaker, Carolyn Gable. And by top of hour, we will roll into Q&A and Circle of Sharing, where we invite all your reflections and questions. Also, the call is in Q&A mode from beginning to the end. So anytime that you have a idea to share or a thought to reflect on or a question to ask, you are welcome to press *6 on your phone, and that will get you in the queue. You're also able to email us your questions at askask@servicespace.org. We'd love to get all your reflections and questions in our circle of sharing, and we try our best even to weave in your thoughts in our moderated conversation as well. And our today's theme is tapping into one's personal toolbox. And Rahul, when I thought of the theme, the very first thing that came to me actually was about 8 years ago when I quit my job and I started working for myself in consulting domain. And I thought that I had all the tools I need to go in and make a huge difference for a number of companies, and the world is waiting there, rolling on the red carpet. So it was a little more interesting than that, and it's like it's part of the process of banging my head in the wall sometimes because people simply wouldn't understand, actually. And along the way, I actually learned that one thing that really helped me out was being able to listen and understand the needs. And boy, the word empathy and what it means, and I got a whole new meaning when I started this. But what I was able to draw on was my customer support and coaching work that I have done for so long, even before that. And I'm so grateful that I could tap into that, but it is so also that, like, sometimes you don't realize that you have it and it is helping you, and sometimes you just develop the new tools because you simply have to. So I'd love to get your thoughts on tapping into the toolbox. And before we get going, let me introduce our moderator, Rahul, to all of our callers as well. Rahul is one of our thought leaders in service space, and he has really founding hand and thoughts in so many of the initiatives. I have had opportunity to talk with Rahul a number of times, and one thing that is always there is a very well-developed, clearly articulated thought, and really what a way to put the ideas together. So Rahul, welcome to the call as well, and if you would please share your thoughts in the toolbox, and if you would please guide us in conversation with Carolyn.
Oh, thank you for that introduction, Devin. Yeah, you know, what you're describing is, to me, sounds like this journey that people go on where at some point you really just leap outside of your comfort zone. And in that process of doing that, there's always going to be a tremendous amount of growth that happens. I mean, we know that there is no comfort in the growth zone, and there's no growth in the comfort zone. So it's excuse me, it's this journey of simultaneously going within when we kind of take a big leap in the world and reach for anything that we aspire for, either for ourselves or for the world. And, you know, I feel like Carolyn's journey is one that embodies that in such a powerful way. As you all know, Carolyn is the CEO of New Age Transportation, which is a company that she founded several decades ago. And if that was just the start of the story, then, you know, it wouldn't be so remarkable. But what is so powerful about it is that she herself has gone on this remarkable journey of going from a waitress to getting her first break in the industry, where she kind of learned this field. And then through, you know, a combination of kind of ambition and initiative and hard work and empathy, managed to start her own company and grow it into a multi-million-dollar company, all through this journey of being kind of a single mother and never forgetting her roots and kind of generosity and the spirit of giving back and empowering others and uplifting others. And, you know, it's such a challenging journey on so many different levels that I'm very, very excited to hear about, you know, all of the aspects of kind of her personal toolbox that came out and came into play and developed further and that continued to get sharpened kind of along the journey of, you know, moving from a place of really scarcity to abundance in so many different ways. So I think you framed it just very, very well, Devin.
Thank you. Thank you, Rahul. I love that idea of comfort and growth, how they interplay and how they make you dive deeper as well, like inside.
Absolutely. And so maybe without further ado, maybe we can just launch into the conversation with Carolyn. I've already given a very, very brief introduction to Carolyn, so I won't overview that again. But first, just wanted to thank you, Carolyn, for joining us on our call and just being so open and receptive to talking about your journey with us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Since I was invited to join your call, so I am as excited. I just have to say I've been, the call failed a couple times, but I was able to log right back.
Ah, okay. So we'll know where you go if you suddenly drop off. I'm sure it's going to be such a rich conversation that we will we'll have plenty to talk about. But Carolyn, you know, at the center of your journey is just this, you know, this remarkable transformation from being a waitress to being a CEO, which is not a journey that many people make at all. And you know, when we were speaking before, you know, of course there's this element of kind of determination and hard work and persistence that comes in, but I think the element that was very surprising and sort of inspiring to me about it was this role of prayer in your journey. So could you talk a little bit more about kind of what the inner aspect of that journey was like for you from waitressing to becoming a CEO, and particularly what the role that sort of prayer played in that transformation?
Sure. I was just disconnected again. So I'm getting the last part of your question, but I think I can follow it through. I was Catholic.
Did we lose you again, Carolyn?
Yeah, but are you back? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, good. Yes, right when you were asking the question, I don't know why, but it just keeps saying call failed, but I'm able to log back on again. But anyway.
Well, Carolyn, it's breaking up again. I'm not sure if it's my signal or if it's yours. Are you still with us on the call? Yeah, I mean, while we're waiting for Carolyn to... Oh, there you are, Carolyn.
Is that better? It's better disconnecting me.
Yeah, it's still a little choppy, and I'm wondering if it's the signal from where you're at, from where you're calling. Are you on a cell or a landline? I'm sure Carolyn will be back in just a few minutes. But, you know, Devin, while we're waiting for Carolyn, you know, your journey of kind of going into the consulting world is one of these things that is, you know, it may have been something that, like, felt like the logical next step in your personal journey. You know, you may have been working in a field for a certain amount of time, and then you decided that things would be better if you worked for yourself. Another aspect that just touches me about Carolyn's journey is that there's nothing about it that's obvious, right? I mean, it's not like being a waitress is something that lends itself to starting a logistics and transportation company. So it's a far leap from where she was, and the stigma that you have to overcome when you're a waitress and then just trying to kind of do anything other than waitressing. You know, I believe Carolyn was a waitress for maybe over a decade before she decided to sort of make a switch. That in itself is just a very high hurdle to get over. And, you know, as you know, we're in a world now where we do have more and more women in positions of power, but several decades ago, for a woman to be CEO of a large and growing company, or even a small company, was not so common. So, you know, there's
exactly,
just multiple big leaps that she was going through. And I feel like the extent to which we kind of go to the edges of where we're comfortable is the extent to which we end up uncovering these inner resources that become those inner tools that we're able to use to kind of continue to grow and then ultimately help others to grow in the process. So,
All right. And what you just, when you were talking about this, Rahul, one book came to my mind. It's Malcolm Gladwell's David versus Goliath. And he has developed a number of fascinating stories of how some of the unique inventions in the world, like how you, for example, treat leukemia, came about in the world. And he's taking into stories of people. And when I think about it, like when you look at it like outside in, you can't even imagine that the person with this kind of background and struggle actually could become such a powerful inventor or entrepreneur or a successful person. And so many stories and so many diverse actually range of initiatives. But one thing that came to me while you were talking was like everybody has this set of toolboxes and everyone has set of challenges. But along the way, if you just keep plugging and try to do certain things right, you never know how things actually align and what you've been struggling with for years can turn into something really meaningful. Just because you are keep continuing plugging at it, thinking about it, trying to solve it, and just an attitude of self-reflection and thinking of how to grow and how to develop, and it can do amazing things. So you're so right. It's like when we think of Caroline, and I'm hoping she can join us pretty soon here. Like you said, it's like you are working as as a waitress for so long, and what a journey, and how inspiring actually for Caroline to become what she has now. So maybe one thing we could try, Rahul, is conference her in. Let me see if I have her phone number and I can bridge her in.
Sure. And Devin, maybe while we're waiting for that, if there are other folks in the call that want to share some reflections on this, they can press star 6 to get in the queue, and we can hear a few stories of or a few reflections on this idea of the toolbox and the personal transformation that comes from taking a big leap.
Absolutely. I love that idea. And that just reminds me of the one reflection we got from Mish, actually, over our reflection thread, like our blog thread. And this is such a beautifully put ripple here from Mish. I think she's in Brooklyn, New York. And she said that love, light, and kindness, invaluable tools in every situation, magnified in power by every time of trial. Grateful.
Oh, beautiful. I think Carolyn may have joined the call.
Yeah, I'm back,
Carolyn.
On. I'm sitting by the router, so I'm hoping that it doesn't disconnect again.
So you are just at the stage where you are sharing a little bit more about, or just beginning to share about kind of what the journey of going from a waitress to a CEO was like, and with particular emphasis on this aspect of prayer that was a part of that journey as well, and of course in addition to all of the hard work and initiative that was involved.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so I think where I left off, that prayer was, my parents were devout Catholics, so prayer was so integrated into our lives that no matter what happened, if it was good, the response was, we'll say a prayer of thanks. If it was a struggle, you weren't feeling well, you know, you were studying for a test, and, you know, we'll say a prayer. Whether it was my grandparents or my aunts or my parents, prayer was so fundamental in our lives that I took that with me to this, and I still have it with me today, that I have this constant dialogue that, you know, am I doing the right thing? Is this going to happen? Is this the right road to go down? And sometimes, as we all know, the answer is there, the voice is there, the signal is there, the sign's there. And then other times it's like God's on vacation and he's, you know, saying, you're on your own, kid. You can do this. No problem. So no matter what happened in life, for me, when times got tough, and there were a lot of difficult times for me. I was a single mom. I was a waitress. All my siblings went on to college and it did very well. But, you know, I took that road less traveled. My soul obviously did not want to take the path of least resistance and just put me on a trajectory of unbelievable highs and lows. So I got a job as a waitress, and little did I know that the 12 years that I was doing that, I was really honing my skills for business, for dealing with people. And when it's all said and done, it's how do you deal with people? How do you respond to people? How do you, you know, what's your level of comfort with other people? So when I went as a waitress, I went then to, got a job finally after years of interviewing and being told no, 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 no. You have no education. You're nothing more than a waitress. And I got a job in a trucking company and begged and pleaded to be put in sales. I was a customer service rep, and it happened. It happened. And then it was, wow, 13 years of struggle, doors started to open for me. The flow of life was, wow, this is a really great ride, and I could look back and say, okay, I had to go through that. That now it all makes sense. And sometimes it makes sense and sometimes it doesn't. So that's a long answer to your first question.
Wow, it's a beautiful answer. What was some of the most unexpected or surprising things that you discovered you had to tap into along the process of kind of making that leap of from the first break that you sort of got in sales to this next big adventure of founding the company and sort of growing it?
Right. Well, back to the toolbox. I was asked last year to speak at a TEDx event at Berkeley. And I thought to myself, all right, what would, 2,000 college kids, what's the one piece of wisdom that I could tell them that I know for sure? And what I know for sure is that before we're ever born, we're given this spiritual toolbox. And we have everything we need inside of us for everything that's going to happen in life. It's just amazing how we're all created equal and we all look different and our DNA is, 99.999% the same? But yet our strengths and our gifts are different. And not to say that I have tenacity and you don't. We all have the same tools, but there's just some that we seem to gravitate. So my tools were tenacity and hard work, and I had the ability to, again, have great faith. So when things happened, when I was a single mom and a waitress, I didn't have the luxury of being depressed. I didn't have the luxury of sitting home and now what am I going to do and how am I going to raise these children? I had to get up and work. I had to get up.
Right.
So I was really honing that muscle that no matter what happens, okay, I got through it. I got through it. I can get through that. I can get through that. So it was no surprise when different opportunities came through with business, there wasn't a fear of, no, I can't do that. It was always, well, hey, I've been through a hell of a lot worse. Sure. I've always been a risk taker. That's part of it, too. That's another tool in my toolbox. I enjoy taking risks, and many I struggled with, and many have paid in spades. So it's always a journey. And just like we talked about in the beginning of the call, it never ends until we take our last breath. When you become too comfortable, I think the soul just says, I got another 10 years here in this body, and I got to shake it up. And when the soul says that, if you don't reach for the old saying, if you don't reach for your learning, your learning reaches for you. And it's never pretty. It's never pretty. But then when you can step back and say, wait, I've been here before. I've been through this before. I have the tools to get through it. We don't have a choice. We get through it, no matter what, right?
Mm.
It all works out in the end. So that was the title of the talk. It's all going to be okay.
I was thinking of this line from a movie that came out a few years ago. I think it was the Exotic Marigold Hotel, where the proprietor says, everything always turns out well in the end. And so if it's not the end, if it's not going
that's
well,
exactly
it's not the
right.
end yet.
There we go. Yes, I totally agree to that. I totally agree. And we don't know, as we talked about before, when you're in the middle of that lesson, when you're in the middle of, oh my God, I just lost my largest account. How did this happen? What am I going to do? You get this frozen, why is this happening feeling? Why is this happening to me? I did everything right, and I gave back. So you go through this whole litany, and then eventually you just say, okay, we got to make it right. We got to move forward, and we have to look for new business, and we have to continue to be on the path of growth.
Right.
So you got two choices. I mean, either you take that choice, or you take the, victim, woe is me, why is this happening to me, and what good ever came out of that? Nothing.
Right, right. You know, what's more astounding to me, Carol, is that you did this all as a single mother, and not just a single mother, but a single mother of seven children.
Yes.
You know, many of us are overwhelmed just by, like, one, and then, you know, even more overwhelmed by number two. I think I was telling you that my second kid is on the way in another couple weeks here at most, and you know, everyone tells us it's going to be challenging, and yet you were kind of making this remarkable journey from, you know, the entrepreneurial journey in and of itself is extremely challenging, and you were doing this while raising seven kids.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you kind of found balance and clarity, and how you prioritized your time and kind of, you know, achieved these two remarkable things simultaneously?
Well, don't forget there were a couple failed marriages in there too. So, you know, when you look at my business side of my life and then you look at the personal side of my life, you know, there were two stories going on at the same time. And they were so woven into each other where, okay, now I've been married and I have these children and I'm, you know, happy, and then the marriage falls apart and you have the business. Seriously, how else can I sit here today and say that I got through it if it wasn't for the help of God and all the angels and all my ancestors? I mean, I think I really visualize when I meditate that there are, you know, a cast of thousands that are helping me on this journey, that it's just not me, that there are so many people, because, you know, raising children, you're absolutely right. You know, it's challenging, but I look at it, we're all souls. These are all souls that have been with me before, that chose me as their mother. They chose the situation. They knew my limitations. They knew that they were here to help me and help themselves and help the world. So believe me, there were challenges with, you know, getting babysitters and trying to work around, you know, sporting events. And, you know, was I a superstar at it? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm just one person. I always laugh and say my kids, if they were on the call, could probably remember everything that I didn't attend. But for the most part, you know.
Oh, Carolyn, did we lose you again?
No, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. You know, it wasn't perfect, but I think that the message is that life is not perfect. And if you're this new baby that's entering into the world, you know, you want to make life perfect for them, right? You want to have your children have the best of everything life has to present. And unfortunately, life isn't like that. There are tough times in life, and there are tough things that are going to happen, and there are going to be tough choices that children are going to have to make. And I look at it as a single mom, these children see that at a very young age, that, you know, life isn't always pretty. And but through faith, through hard work, through tenacity, through looking in your toolbox of, hey, I've got this, I've got that, I can get through it, my mom got through it. You know, how many people get up at the Grammy Awards or the Oscars or whatever, and the story's all the same. You know, they were raised by a single mom, and they get up there, and that's the one thing. I give praise to God above, and I give praise to my mother for the hard work that she showed me what to do. So I'll take that over being in a perfect marriage with, you know, perfect kids, and then they become adults and they're, you know, clueless how to deal with life struggles.
Right. I mean, the adversity we face in life is almost, you know, the resistance that makes our muscles strong as we kind of
Yes.
push forward.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You know, the thing that was jumping out to me as you were sharing about this is that this notion that you really felt that so many people were with you, you know, your parents and your ancestors and your divine beings
Yes.
That were kind of pushing you forward. And, you know, what's remarkable is that that kind of sense of partnership almost with the universe is almost the antithesis of what the dominant culture teaches us about success. You know, mm-hmm. in many ways, your story is sort of the prototypical story of a self-made woman. And the outcome that usually happens on the other side of whenever someone is self-made in our culture is this story of, you know, ego. Like, I'm so capable and I'm so remarkable and I did this myself. I mean, at least that's what we're encouraged to project. Even
right.
if we get up in front of others and say, I thank my mom, I thank God, what people are secretly thinking is, I'm so special, I'm gifted and I'm talented, I'm the chosen one in some way, right? And therefore, mm-hmm. I am the one who should be having this. But you really have this deep sense of kind of humility and a divine order within life
yes,
that was
definitely.
Guiding your life. And
yes.
so could you share a little bit more about how that sense stayed with you over this kind of remarkable rise?
Well, when you've lived the life that I've lived, when, you know, like I said, when you go back and here I was, you know, married and it didn't work out, and then I was left with children and waitressing and, you know, literally not enough money at the end of the night to pay a babysitter and pick up milk at 7-Eleven. To go from that point of my life to starting a company and you know, like you said, billing millions and millions and millions of dollars through the years, I am so humbled by that, wow, I was really chosen to do this. Because I didn't have a college education. I was not the smartest girl in the room. I didn't come from, you know, a successful father. My father died at 42 years old, so I didn't have that pedigree that, well, my dad went to Harvard, and of course, you know, I had this great, unbelievable education. I didn't have that. I was a girl that grew up in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, which was a farm town without an education, that made some crazy choices. Again, they were all the right choices, right? At the time, there was a lot of judgment from a lot of people that, you know, you're never going to amount to anything. I heard this over and over and over again for many, many years. But again, I had this toolbox that made me know that that's not true. Wow, I had tenacity. And I could sit and I could talk to you. I could talk to you for 8 hours. And little did I know that ability, that's what people want. Selling freight is nothing. If I'm talking to you and we're having a deep conversation like this, I'm going to walk out and you're going to say, I'm going to give my business to her because I really like where she's coming from and she appreciates the value of what I'm going to offer her and she wants a good connection with me and I trust her. And she has a 27 years in the industry that I know she will always watch my back and she will watch my product, my valued product that I spend so much money making. This is a woman that I can trust. So all that can't be taught in an MBA class. It just can't. Right. So where it all begins, I always just say that, you know, I am inspired. I give all glory to God. I do believe that I have this tribe, this cast of thousands that are helping me. Having said that, do I feel alone at times that they're all, like I said, on vacation? They're all kind of like, you're on your own, kid. You know, I guess if I were to say an analogy, it would be, you know, a child that's starting to walk, right? Where, sure, the mother could hold that child forever and put him in a stroller and delay that process. But as a parent, the parent says, no, you're going to learn to walk, and you're going to fall, and you're going to bump your head. And that's how I look at it, that when I'm going through these struggles, it's kind of like, no, you can do it. You can do it. We're here. We got your back. This is all part of the evolution. It's all part of your evolution. Or, you know, I'm like a little kid going, well, pick me up. I don't want to go through all this.
Right. You know, it's beautiful how you shared that empathy has been so central to your success in business. And I think, as you rightly point out, that's not something that's covered in business school. You know, it's not taught, right. And it's certainly not emphasized at all. And I feel like your story is one that lends itself to really, you know, uncovering the power of this very basic human skill, which we completely neglect in our society.
Yes.
Especially in the area of our most dominant institutions, which are kind of companies and corporations today. Why do you think, I mean, on the one hand, it's such an obvious fact, right? We trust the people that empathize with us, that we can speak to and be comfortable with, and that listen to us. And yet, it seems so glaringly absent in this way. Why do you think that we haven't kind of made that connection in our society, in our culture, around how central and important empathy is to our success in any endeavor, but especially business?
Yeah, I think what happens, people, you know, life is tough. Life is really difficult. And I think people get overwhelmed. They get, you know, what's that bottom line dollar? Not that I don't, too. Don't get me wrong in business. But, you know, what's that bottom line? And, you know, people become a commodity. And, you know, it's more fear-based. And, you know, again, I can go there really quickly to be fear-based. But it's really when you have trust and you have a belief system that it's all good. It's all good. We're all going to be okay. Having that empathy for what people are going through, being curious, being using all of the skills that go beyond business. You know, there's a great book called God is My CEO. And it talks about, you know, companies that really believe that God is their CEO, the vision of the company, and great, unbelievable things that people who believe that way. So I don't know where it comes from. I don't know if you're born with it. I don't know if it's a tool that is honed. I try with my children always, you know, have empathy when they're talking about somebody else or a situation that they're in. Have empathy for that person. You know, the old saying, if people knew better, they'd do better. They don't know. Well, it's interesting because we're all on the same journey here. We are all on the same journey, and we're all going to end up at the same place. But yeah, we're all going, you know, in all these different directions kind of on our own. Or when we connect in a venue like this, it only makes us stronger. Oh, yeah,
oh,
okay,
sure.
I can do that. Sure, I got that. I've got that skill. I've got that ability. You're right. Yeah, I haven't used that. Yeah. So that's how I look at it. That, you know, calls like this are only strengthen the tools that we already have. We've got.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I, as you were sharing, I was just thinking that it's that empathy and that recognition of how we're all on the same journey, combined with kind of knowing what you went through the process of single motherhood, that almost lays at the foundation of kind of your philanthropy work, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Did you tell us a little bit more about kind of the Expect a Miracle Foundation?
Sure.
What it
sure.
does and what the inspiration was?
Sure. What happened, I started my company, I started in sales in deregulation in the 80s. And I was really good at it, and I had a lot of customers. And then I decided I was going to try and go on my own. I had an offer from a company that the man that owned the company said, you know, I'll pay you a great salary and you can go on commission. And I know he kind of laid the foundation. As I look back, it was all in divine order. But it was an offer that I couldn't refuse, and it was meant to be. So, but what happened, it exploded, and I had so many customers that I was losing control of how to handle all of it. So anyway, that's when I started New Age Transportation, a new age in trucking. And this whole, you know, it used to be totally regulated, now it was deregulated. Anyway, I puttered along for 10 years and did well. And then in 2001, I got the Time Warner account. And that was a big, huge double door for me personally, for the company. And, you know, there was no more struggle. I mean, it was like drinking water from a fire hose. And anybody that's in business knows that moment where, wow, it's the greatest thing. There's so much business you can't even handle it, and you love it, and it's great. But then it was, okay, wait a minute. The voice inside of me said, this is not about you. You know, don't ever think for a second that there was something great, so great and wonderful that you did, that you got this big account. It was all for you. You've been chosen to give back. So I thought, okay, I'm going to give back. I want to give back. I love giving back anyway, and I had already done that, but I wanted to do it on a bigger scale. So what could I do? Well, different things were coming to me about single parents. I had a customer who committed a crime. He was in work release, but he was telling me that they had five children, and they couldn't go to the pool. They couldn't get all the things that he provided before. Now he had to pay for this work release. So that really triggered it, and I thought, wow, okay, how many kids are suffering because of the parents, right? That they didn't ask for this. So what I ended up doing was starting a foundation called the Expect a Miracle Foundation. And what it does is it pays for extracurricular activities for children. They want to swim, we pay for it. They want to play the cello, we pay for it. They want to play football. Do you know how many kids, boys, want to play football? But they can't. They're being raised by a single mom, you know. The majority of men that pay child support in this country is such a small percentage to the children that aren't getting it. So this single mom struggles. So anyway, we've been able to help over 8,000 children attain that dream of, it's so, you know, it's just something so small that we're doing, and yet they are so grateful, so incredibly grateful, because it's, you know, it's good to have an education, yes. You know, thank you, Bill Gates, for education. But who's really working on the self-esteem of children? And if we don't have their self-esteem intact, what's this next generation going to be like? Right. So, it's great. It's very rewarding to be able to help.
Yeah, and it's such a neglected area. You know, I think people don't typically think about this sort of thing in the world of philanthropy. So it's beautiful that you could step in and fill that niche. Can you share a little bit more? I mean, are there any particular stories from the Expect a Miracle Foundation that jump out, or even just understanding a little bit more about the mechanics of how it works? I mean, are people applying for grants? Are you guys going out and searching for women who need this? Like, how does it work? And
right.
Some of the stories that have really stayed with you.
Right. Well, what they do, they come to us. You know, it's pretty much word of mouth. They come to us. All right, so talk about great stories. There was an article in the paper summer about a football team, a kids, like 10-year-old football team, that had won the state champion for Illinois. And they wanted to go to the World Series in Ohio, but they didn't have the money. And it was on the front page of the Chicago Tribune. And so I called and left a message, and I said, you know, I want these kids to go, right? What do I have to do? And I'm sure there's other people that are being moved to call you. And so that Monday I got a call by two of the directors, and they said, we just want to let you know the response was overwhelming, and, you know, the kids are going to go to the World Series in Ohio, but we just wanted to let you know that the majority of these kids who are playing football got the money from the Expect a Miracle Foundation. So, that was huge. That was one of those moments where you're like, okay, good. Okay, I'm on the right track. Another time, a mother had written us a letter that every year her boys would go to the football games, like the local park district football games, and they always wanted to play. And then when she heard about the Expect a Miracle Foundation, you know, she took pictures. She had four boys. She goes, it's the first year that they've been able to play. So when you hear things like that, you're like, yeah, okay, wow, this is, I'm doing the right thing. It feels good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. I mean, I got chills when you shared the first story about how all of those, a majority of those kids had already been touched by expecting.
Yeah, that was very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You know, the other element that I just find remarkable with your journey along this kindness and generosity trajectories is that the official giving that you've been doing through Expect a Miracle Foundation, I feel like rests on this foundation of what was already kind of a generosity practice that you've held and that you continue to hold on to today, I believe, through this $100 a day experiment where you're gifting to strangers. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that is and maybe some stories from that?
Yes. So, you know, I was at a point again, you know, I'm always aware of, okay, that maybe there's something else I need to be doing. The Expect Miracle Foundation is great, but, you know, it's a 501(c)(3) and I'm really limited. I can only do what's in the bylaws. So I decided I really want to expand the giving. You know, I've been blessed by beyond measure in my lifetime, and I want to give back. So I was at the airport, and there was a mother sitting next to me. I was at the, I don't know, like the canteen, whatever it is, and this little boy was sitting with the mother, and he wanted another piece of pizza. And meanwhile, my children were there, and I'd given each one of them like $20 to go get food. And anyway, this little boy wanted another piece of pizza, and the mother's like, no, I can't afford it. And I didn't have the courage at that moment to say, let me buy it. You know, it's embarrassing. I didn't want to embarrass the mom, and I didn't want to, it's just awkward. And then it came to me again. I was at my granddaughter's school. It was Grandparents' Day, and the same thing happened. There was a long line, and the little girl ahead of me, her mother had died. I'd heard the story from the mother standing in the line. The little girl died. And anyway, came and she wanted, it wasn't more than $15. Grandmother's like, no, we don't have that money. And I'm standing there going, well, I do. I can help you. But I didn't. I didn't have the courage to do it. So I went on a speaking seminar, and there was a woman that I sat next to, and she had a little envelope, like the size of a business card, and she had, you know, she was a speaker, she was a real estate agent, she was, you know, she had all these different cards in there. And it came to me, I thought, wow, what if I wrote believe on that envelope, and I put five cards in of really motivating, something really motivating, a saying, or, and then put a $100 bill in. And so then that would eliminate these moments where I want to help, and I could just give them the envelope, right? How easy would that be? So I did. That's exactly what I did. So I got the cards printed, put the $100 bill in, and then, you know, this has gone on for the past, I don't know, 3-4 years. I need people to, I call them my stewards of love, you know, so if I'm speaking, I'll bring, you know, many of them with me and say, please give them away. I can't be everything. I can't be everywhere. But if there's just one person see that could really use this. Anyway, the local newspaper where I live picked it up. And so every year at Christmas, we give one away. Again, it has to, they write in. And it's not for them. It's for someone else. The great part about the whole thing is that it's only $100, but people will take that $100, like a school teacher, and she'll, you know, we took your $100, and then each child brought in $10, and we went and we filled up bags for the homeless, and so it's this great ripple effect, which I love to see. You know, I don't want to be dead and seeing it, right? I want to be alive to see the ripple effect of of a kindness that, you know, that maybe it was, I never, you know, like I said, I never feel that it's my idea. I'm just the vessel. It's just I've been inspired by something much greater to see it happen. So, yeah, it feels, you know, like I said, it feels really, really good when you're giving, especially the more you give, the more you get back. It's the old, you know, universal law.
That's beautiful. You know, it reminds me of the smile cards in the third person ecosystem.
It's exactly right.
Yeah, except this is sort of like five cards plus a $100 bill with your smile card, you know?
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. And you, just in terms of the mechanics of it, like when you started doing this initially, were people opening the envelope right there? Would you just like hand them the envelope and kind of walk away, or?
A lot of different stories. You know, I gave them to like all my kids and, you know, all my employees, and we did have a website that unfortunately it really, you know, wasn't me, and so it has to, just talking to you now, I'm like, oh, I need to do that again. But it was great to hear the stories. You know, one person gave it to the pizza man. You know, she could tell that the pizza man, you know, maybe it was a second job. I don't know what the story was. But and he saw it, and, oh, my God, you know, the different people at Walmart, you know, where they were struggling. You know, they didn't have the bill. I mean, I was the other day, I was at the store, and I live in Chicago. I'm in Arizona today, and my credit card didn't go through. It was a fraud alert from Citibank, which is great. But I was so embarrassed. I'm standing there. The guy, the cashier, is looking at me like, yeah, right. Like, oh, my God, this is like the fraud alert. Yeah, right. Okay, move aside or come up with money. It was just this humiliating feeling. I mean, I was back 40 years ago when I didn't, it was declined because I didn't have the money in there. So how cool would it have been for somebody to say, I got you. I got your groceries here, you know. So that, a lot of people have done that, and a lot of people, the people are so grateful, they're so incredibly grateful. It more so than the $100, they're just grateful that they were recognized, that they're having a tough time, they're struggling. You know, like when the newspaper would write in, you know, my neighbor is getting chemo, and her husband, it seems like a whole domino effect when you read these requests that come in. You know, the husband has brain cancer, she has breast cancer, they both lost their job. You think, what's $100 going to do, right? But it's that offer of hope. Oh, okay, there are people that care. There is somebody that cares enough that, and maybe that seed, that one seed of hope is what gives them the courage to go on. How cool would that be?
Yeah. That's beautiful. I'm wondering if the time that you spent as a waitress also informed this idea of like wanting to plant these little seeds of hope as you kind of move through the world. I mean, was there any connection between some of the challenges that you faced then, or maybe an experience where someone had done the same for you back when you were a waitress that is anywhere in the foundational inspiration that feeds this $100
right.
a day experiment?
Well, there were many, like I said before, there were many nights where, okay, I had to pay the mortgage, or not the mortgage, but the rent, you know, or I had to make a car payment, or my gas tank was empty. And then, I don't know, by the grace of God, I'd get a $50 tip. Or, you know, I'd get this big party at the end of the night, and it was slow. It was really, you know, everyone had gone home, and then, like, maybe a party of 20 people came in. It's like, wow, okay. I could pay my mortgage payment, you know. So there was always this connection of thank you, you know, thank you for, you know, I got through it. So like I said, just like with the other day at the store, that never leaves you. Never, ever, ever. I could have billions in the bank, and that never leaves you of those moments of when you didn't have anything, and you were praying for a miracle. And when the miracle came, yeah, okay, thank you. Thank you. And it does. I mean, it does come, and it comes in all different ways and people and offers, and you're the right person at the right place at the right time. Like, how'd that happen? Wow, okay. Because I was hopeful, because I was praying. I pray for miracles all the time.
Yeah. You know, it occurs to me that there's this element of humility in the way that you've moved through the world, and really an element of humility in prayer itself. You know, it's almost like a humbling of oneself to allow grace to come in, to allow what needs to happen to sort of naturally arise. And I was thinking, as you were sharing, about how, you know, life perhaps is arranged in a way such that many of our prayers do get answered, but what's missing is the humility, in holding the humility to kind of recognize that the prayer was answered, or maybe even just a very quick forgetting that there was a prayer behind this thing, this beautiful thing that came into our lives.
Right.
And so I'm just so struck that, you know, you haven't lost your humility in this very remarkable journey. What's been key? What's been helped you kind of hold on to and remember that humility? Because it seems like that's really also been kind of foundational to this gratitude, right? That keeps
right.
this kind of virtuous engine going. So how have you kept humility kind of alive and rooted for you over the course of the journey?
Yeah, you know what? Because I'm still on this journey, and it's not always easy. And there are, you know, problems with work or problems with my children or problems with, okay, you know, I would like to see, like, just a green light. Okay, Carolyn, go down this path, keep going. This is it, you know. And I look at, you know, 20 different paths, and I'm like, oh, am I in the right one? So I'm always being humbled. I don't think you ever get to a point, unless you're Donald Trump, where you think, okay, I got it all. I am everything, and I've got it all, and I don't look at that. I'm always looking at, am I doing the right thing? Is this the path that I am supposed to continue to go down? You know, it's like now, it's like, you know, do I continue with my company? I'm being called to do exactly what I'm doing now. I really would love to open a spiritual retreat center where business people can come. You know, that's a good part about my journey, is that a lot of spiritual people that are out there, a lot of great, wonderful, enlightened people, they never really had a business. So people that are in business that are saying, yeah, okay, I want to be taught all this spiritual enlightenment, want somebody to help me with that, and at the same time, I'm dealing with all the struggles of running a business. So I would love that. I would love, if I had one wish, that that's what it would be, that I would open this great retreat center where business people could come that are enlightened, that want to do more, that are not being fulfilled, that say, yeah, you're right, you know, I got billions or millions in the bank, and you know, I want to give back, but I don't know how, and I don't have these tools, or if I have the tools, I don't know how to tap into them. And so, I mean, like I said, I would love to do that, but it doesn't always work like that. And it's kind of like, no, I need you over here, and okay, do I want to be over here? Do I? So anyway, the point is that it's a journey. It's a journey, and there's no roadmap here where I know where I'm going to be in a day, a week, a month, that, yeah, this is what I need to do. You know, I can have a calling, but it's not like the calling just comes. No more than when I was a waitress, I had a calling to get out of waitressing. I wanted to get out of waitressing, but it didn't just happen overnight. You know, and I'm the type of person, I want it to happen overnight. If I see it, I want it all just to happen. And, you know, that makes you humble. And you want something and you can't get it. And so I'm always being humbled.
Mm. That's very beautiful, and what a beautiful aspiration to hold, you know, a retreat center for people in the business world. May it be so.
Yeah, thank you.
And Rahul and Carolyn, it is resonating so well with me. So if you ever start a retreat, Carolyn, I'll be the first to sign up there.
All right, good. I'll let you know where it's at. Okay, good.
Can't wait to join that.
All right, good.
And Rahul, if I may invite all of our callers, and would love for you to continue with your next question, but before that, if I may, for all of our callers, if you have a thought to share or a question to ask, when you press star 6 on your phone, they'll get you in the queue, and then we will get you in the call. So it's time for Circle of Sharing, and you're welcome to press star 6 on your phone, and that'll get you in the queue. You're also welcome to email us questions at ask@servicespace.org. So feel free to chime in with your phone or email, and we'd love to expand our circle of sharing to all of you right now. And go ahead, Rahul. Thank you for the quick invite for all callers.
Sure. You know, Carolyn, you were sharing a little bit about your Catholic upbringing, but I know that there was a point at which kind of metaphysics started inspiring you. I mean, most Catholics don't kind of you have a set of beliefs that's a little bit beyond what most Catholics believe. So I'm wondering if you can share a little bit more about the that spiritual dimension of your life, you know, and so how it got triggered and how it's inspired you and shifted you and changed your outlook on life.
Okay. Okay, so being raised Catholic, you know, you're raised to fear God. You know, if I stub my toe, my mother would say, well, God's punishing you for something you did. I mean, so you're raised with this belief system that, you know, this God is a vengeful. You know, if you don't follow his rules, and he's going to really make your life tough. And it never made sense to me. It didn't make sense when the nuns were talking about it, that, you know, you're going to go to hell if you don't do this and you don't. Even as a young child, it was like, I don't know if I really believe all that. So anyway, what happened in the early 90s, I was at a local fair in the neighborhood, and the School of Metaphysics had a table there. And this woman who was head of the school, I stopped and I'm like, what is metaphysics? What's all this about? And so she was telling me that it's, you know, it's about the soul's journey, and it's about what life is here for, and what are we all here for, and blah, 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 blah. So anyway, I said to her, you know, I'm divorced, and I have children, and I've made so many mistakes, and, you know, I've done everything wrong, and blah, blah, blah. And she looked at me, and she goes, you've never made a mistake in your life. It is a lesson that your soul wanted to learn. And it was like, wow, oh. I mean, this whole bag of guilt, rocks, of shame, of fear and everything just came right off my shoulders. And I was like, I love this. It's like I had finally found my belief system. So I studied. I couldn't get enough of it. I joined the school, and, you know, the teacher ended up teaching in my home, and she would come at 7 at night, and, you know, she'd leave at 2, 3 in the morning. I couldn't get enough of it. Even to this day, I can't get enough of it. So as the journey went on, I started my company in 89. And so this happened in the early 90s. I was using all the same principles of visualization, of putting, you know, this belief system that, yes, you can have it and you can do it, and writing down my 10 most wanted and sending them to the universe, and knowing that, yeah, the universe wants us all to be successful and happy, and God wants us to be happy. And it was amazing at the same time that my business then just kept getting better and better and better, because my mind shift of, instead of shame and guilt and what a loser I was, no, this was all part of the journey, and it made me stronger, and it made me, you know, more resilient, and I can do this, and I've been through this, and so, yeah, it was the greatest gift of all, and somewhere along the way, the Catholic, the doctrine, you know, I had to put it aside. I don't believe in all of it. I'm so grateful for my faith, and I'm grateful for the Blessed Mother, who I pray to every day. I carry, you know, I have so many rosaries. I have rosaries everywhere I go, so she is always with me. I'm so grateful for that, and I'm grateful for the saints, and I'm grateful for all of it. But the doctrine, no, I don't. My God is a loving God, and He is with me on this journey at all times. And no matter what I do, no matter what mistake I make, He loves me as I love my children. I never say, well, you made a mistake. You got an F on that test. I don't love you anymore. You know, it's like ridiculous, right? Oh, I love you, of course. I'm going to help you, right? I mean, so if I feel this way to my children, that's how my God, I believe, loves me. You can do better. Mm-hmm. Come on. I know you can do better.
Wow. If I may ask a question, if I may become video of the host here and ask a question, Karen, Rahul, and always think of struggles I have had, Carolyn, growing up, and like, you know, we all go through our phases. And the question that I have is, if there is a guy out there or a gal, there's a person out there that is struggling to find that positive spirit, that spark, that's kind of help, that would help keep that person going, what would be your advice to that person?
Gratitude, number one. Sit down with a piece of paper and be grateful. You know, if you, let's just say you're, you know, you have nothing, absolutely nothing. Okay, did you get up today? Did you go to the bathroom? Thank you. Thank you, my kidneys are working. Are you able to look outside? Okay, thank you that my eyes are working. Can you walk? Can you move? Thank you for your body. So being grateful for the things that we just take for granted is a great start. I have always felt when I am in that place of despair, I am not in the place of gratitude. God does not live there. I think if there is a supreme being, He just like I, again, I connect so much with my children. Okay, if you're going to go there, then go ahead and go in your room. I don't want to see it. I don't want to be a part of it. But when you want to come out of your room and you want to be grateful and you want to be happy, then I'll talk to you. I love you the same. I think you're great. You're awesome. But I'm not going there. So when we get to that point of, yeah, gee, you know, I have nothing to live for. Nothing is working out for me. That's not true. That's not true. Write down. And then when you're grateful, I mean, it's been proven, too, chemically. You know, the endorphins start flying and the dopamine starts flying. You become hopeful. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, I did have a warm towel when I got out of the shower. Yeah, I did have a shower. Yeah, I did. I was able to drink water today. So when you're in that, it's amazing. Then some good things start coming your way. You're in that flow of energy where, you know, it's positive. Staying in that other place. You know, we all want to get dragged there. It's like a huge magnet that wants to pull us there. Do everything in your power not to go there. There's nothing good there. So you're like Dr. Phil, right? How's it working for you? There's nothing good there for being, you know, self-serving and woe is me.
so well said. And what a paradigm that, like, no matter where you are and no matter what the situation might be grateful. There are always things that you are grateful about. And what a paradigm, like, look for positive from inside.
Yes.
And it can be like a magic in the mundane, but that's the point, a place to start. Thank you. Thank you for that insight. And I think we have a couple of callers in the queue here. So let me get to our first caller.
Hi, everyone. This is Mish in sunny New York.
Hi.
Hi there, Carolyn and Raul and Devin and everyone on the call. I just a quote and a thought, a quote that I remembered that the call took me to was from Eckhart Tolle. He said, life will give you whatever experience is the most helpful for the evolution of your consciousness. And listening to the talk today, every challenge that I've gone through in my life has been a teacher for me, and it activates, I think every challenge that you face, every time you go out of your comfort zone, I think that activates your toolbox and reveals to you the tools that you might not have even known that you had, and new growth comes with every challenge, and I think new tools are added to your toolbox. And for me, I think the most powerful tool probably for all of us is our heart. And I think our heart just charges the batteries of every tool. And facing mm-hmm. challenges, although sometimes I'm like, oh, no, not another wave. Oh, God. But then I get happy because I say, okay, I'm going to grow. I'm going to learn. I'll be better for myself and other people. So I just... I love this idea. I never thought about a spiritual toolbox. So thank you so much for giving me this wonderful thought to entertain. And it's great being here with all of you today.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thanks. I know when I go through these tough times, too, you know, I always like, God, don't love me so much. Aren't I done yet? Haven't I proven myself enough yet? Is there
as long as we get a breather in between the waves.
Yes,
then,
exactly. It doesn't work like that. It seems like I get great things that happen, like, wow, one after another. Oh, my God, oh, my God. And then on the other end, it's like, whoa, that's a bullet. Oh, my God, that's another bullet. That, you know, so... Yeah, it happens, and then you just, you know, you have to surrender.
Yeah,
you have to surrender
to
what is and go with it, and you're absolutely right. It only makes you stronger. You get through it, and you're better. Yeah. You're
thank
more
you for
empathetic.
Thank you for such a wonderful call, Carol. Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mish. Always, always so happy to hear your voice on American calls.
Thank you.
And let me get to our next caller here.
Hi, this is Gozo from Cupertino, and thank you, Carolyn, for your wonderful journey and for sharing that journey with us. Mish actually stole my question. I was gonna ask you, you know, you said that we're born with everything we need for all the challenges we're going to face in life or for all the experiences we're going to have in life, and I was wondering if you thought some of those things that we were born with had like a time release on them or had to be activated and, you know, so in a way that you had to spend 12 years waitressing to activate maybe that empathy or maybe that emotional intelligence that served you in the business world. But I think Mish covered that on the last question. I have another question. And feel free to answer pieces of both. And I love what you said about gratitude. I really love what you say about empathy and submitting to divine will. And I'm wondering, you know, being a person who's got the experiential wisdom of all those things, of gratitude, of humility, of empathy, what's your growing edge now? Like, what keeps you going now? What's your learning edge now? What, like you said, what we learn, we don't reach out for what we learn. What we learn reaches out for us. What's reaching out for you now?
Well, I really feel that my business was, you know, extremely successful. It still is, but we lost a large account last year, and it just, to me, was like a universal nudge that, okay, you got to move on, you know, and being called to do something much greater, much bigger, and I am really hiding behind being a business owner. So, you know, you get the sense, you get this feeling, and, you know, it takes a lot of courage to follow that, to say, and I know there's a lot of people on this call that have, you know, like Nippon, that have done that, that have had a great job and a great income, but yet they're called to do something so much bigger. And it's like, oh, wait a minute, this is another learning lesson. This is, it's so much easier for me to just say, oh, I'm going to go to Arizona, chill out, retire, do nothing, you know. No, I can't. Part of me like wants to do that, and then this other part, the soul, is like, no, hey, we just got a few more years left, whether it's, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, I don't know how much longer I have left. This soul of mine is taking me on this unbelievable ride and journey. So I have to be open. I have to be open to what I'm being called to do. I think we all do, not just me, everybody. If you're in a job and you hate it, you get up every morning and you hate it, don't go there. This is not what your soul wants. You're going to get sick. You're going to get cancer. You're going to get a heart attack. You're going to have a heart attack. Your body is going to, it's not going to go with it. You have to go with what makes you happy. We were born with the toolbox, and we were born with gifts in the toolbox. God gave us all these gifts in life to say, this is your gift. This is, you know, I saw Deepak Chopra once, and he said, I believe in reincarnation, but I don't know how long it is before I'm going to come back. You know, it could be centuries and centuries. So this lifetime, we have to do everything we can in this lifetime. So I don't know how much time everybody has. None of us know. That's the mystery of life. So are you living the life that you want to live, that your soul is yearning to live? So when you do that, and we all know what that feels like, when we are one with our soul, we're like, yes, this is what I was born to do. Wow, this feels really great. And sometimes when you're in the middle of the lesson, you don't know that. You're just struggling to get out. You're just fighting to get what the learning is. God, this is really tough. Why is this happening to me? Why did I lose my large account? At this point, I don't really want to do this. And, you know, we all go through it. It's not a Carol and Gable dilemma. It's a universal mankind dilemma.
Beautiful. I'd like to follow up on that. What I've experienced, and I was wondering if you've experienced the same thing, is that, you know, you get that, what people call that still small voice, or, you know, that divine guidance, that just that feeling that you know, that this is not it for you, you need to be over here. And we often ignore that, right? Because like you said, we're like, well, you know, I'm cushy right now. Things are nice. You know, I want to stay here. And what I found is that life or the universe or God will, if you don't follow that still small voice, it will create circumstances in your life where you have to follow that small voice.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you had inclinations in your business that you needed to shift on from that, and you said, no, I'm okay, and then that's when you lost the big account. I wonder if you had the still small voice before you lost the big account.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I've been called. I've had a calling for a long time to do. I've had retreats, and then people were like, "When are you going to have the next one? When are you going to have the next one?" Well, I can't. I'm too busy with my business. You know, I can't do it all. But so then, what happens? And it's like, all right, the universe says, "Well, let's take away this big account, and then you'll have more time." Right? That's not the answer I want to hear. I don't want to hear that. I want more business, so then I don't have to worry so much. And so like I said, sometimes it doesn't work out the way we want, and you're absolutely right. And what Phil's saying, treat yourself as if you had cancer, you will never get it. So do the things that we're being called to do, and there won't be so much resistance in your life. But sometimes that resistance, I don't know what it is, boy, we just, I got to have that second piece of cake, right? It's like, why? You know, we sometimes go out of our way to self-sabotage ourselves in so many ways when we know what is the right thing to do. And why do we gravitate to that? You know, I have no idea. It's our humanness, and we have to love our humanness, and we have to love our frailties, and we have to love the things that are not perfect about ourselves. And when we can do that, then it seems life gets so much better. But when we get stuck, and then nothing happens.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Carolyn. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and Kozo, thank you for those beautiful, beautiful questions. I was getting a couple of chills as I was hearing Carolyn's response, especially given the journey that you've been on, Kozo. You know, Carolyn, I'm curious about how your personal journey, particularly in the spiritual dimension, has impacted your children. Because I know that you kind of believe that everyone is on their own journey and they're coming with their own set of kind of callings and inclinations and challenges to deal with. And yet you've gone through such a huge deepening of your journey, and it's spanned so many different dimensions. How have your children reflected on your journey? How has it impacted them? You know, what do they sort of take from the inspiration that you springing up from within you as you go through your journey?
It's interesting because they are really resistant to it. I don't know. They must think I walk on water in my spare time because they're kind of like, well, yeah, of course, right? She worked hard. So that's why these things happen to her. My older son, I don't even know if he really believes in God. You know, we had this conversation about, life after death just a few weeks ago. And I said, if I didn't think that there was a life after death, I would just kind of like end it today, right? This whole life to me is preparing me for the next life, whatever that next life looks like. And he's like, whatever, I don't think there's a next life. This is it. This is it. So my children are nowhere near where I am. They're on their own journey. I love them all for the journey that they're on. It's like saying, okay, you know, I know where you're going and I know where this is going to end up, but, they have to figure it out on their own. They have to figure it out on their own. But they're not as spiritual as I am. They just have a sense that, you know, I was lucky. Hmm. And I don't feel that way. There's an element of luck, don't get me wrong. But I am blessed, and I have always been blessed. And they'll get it. I hope they get it before I die. But they'll get it. We all get it one way or the other, right? Hmm. We all get it one way or the other. Even Ted Turner now is like, you know what, maybe Jane Fonda was right. Maybe there is a God. He's like, as I get closer to the end, I'm starting to change my belief system. Yeah, well, that's what happens. At the end, we all kind of, oh, God, if this is it, I hope there is a God. So we all get it in the end.
Beautiful, beautiful. Sure. I know that we're coming towards our call. Devin, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Rahul. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to turn it actually back over to you for some closing, since we're sort of getting towards the end of our time together.
Right. So I was looking at your profile on the Urgent Call page, Carolyn, and I was drawn into one link on the Lake Geneva News website, and there is this beautiful story about how you have different signs or different quotes.
Yes.
On your house as an oceanfront, and it's very inspiring to see your perspective as to how you were dreaming of owning a home there, and now you are owning one home there, and so you want this beautiful quotes for people to read and get inspired, I would guess. And then one quote that I'm reading here, I'm stuck there actually right now. It says, positive attitude is a magnet for positive results.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that come through so well in today's conversation. If I may ask you to just expand on it for a minute, the role of positive attitude, and you touched on surrender and gratefulness and how to draw on that synergy and that voice from inside. What more would you say for someone out there to cultivate that positive attitude in their own life?
Yeah, I think being positive, it's definitely one of my gifts. I think it really resonates with faith. When you have faith, you're positive. You have hope. You have faith. My home up in Lake Geneva, you know, I bought this home on the lake up there. It's Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, and there's a path that goes all around the lake. And that was my prayer to God, that if I ever had a home on the lake, I would make it so inviting for all the walkers that walk around the lake. Anyway, there was a fence, and we put like 178 quotes on the fence. I had no idea when I was doing this that it would take off the way it did. I mean, we've had over 26,000 people that have come there. It's like the spiritual mecca of coming to read the quotes that, you know, the stories. I wrote a book on it, and the stories of people that came there when they were going through chemo, that came and prayed, and, you know, I offered the hope. And so I offered that positivity to other people that don't feel alone. Don't feel that you're the only one here on this journey. We're all here to help each other. We're all the same. We all look different, which is the craziest thing in the whole world, how that all worked, but we all look different. But inside, we're all the same. We all want to be loved. It is all about love, 100%. Life is all about love. And when you're in that space of love, how can you not be anything else but positive? So my advice would be is, just like the caller said, go to the heart. Go to the heart where the love is. And be kind. Go to the grocery store. Look at somebody smile. Maybe that's the first time somebody smiled at them in a week. You know, be kind. And we like your outfit, or we like your hair. If you see it, then just say it, and, you know, make the world a better place because you're in it. And how could you not be positive then?
Wow, wow. Yeah. How well said, and what a message. And Karen, we are reaching towards our 10:30 mark, like end of our call time here. We always like to ask this question to all of our guest speakers. What can we, meaning all of us, our Swiss-based volunteers, can do for you in this beautiful journey of like making difference in lives of so many people? How can we help you?
Well, you can pray for me. To me, that is the greatest gift of all. Through collective prayer, God will show me the way, will open doors for me, will enlighten me, will, you know, there is nothing greater than anybody can ever do for me except pray for me. Definitely. And reach out to me. I would love to meet with, I would love to connect with people. I would love to, you know, if you're in business, of course I have to put my business hat on now. If you're in business and you have product that you need shipped, would love to do that for you. My company is New Age Transportation. You can find us on the web. You know, if there's spiritual groups that want to get together, would love to do that too. So, number one, if everybody listening would pray for me, I know I would feel it and be totally grateful for it.
Absolutely. And thank you. Thank you so much, Caroline. My inspiration for today's call is be grateful.
That's
for
it.
All
be
that
grateful.
I have in my life.
That's
and,
right.
And then surrender to the conflicts. If there is something that is saying that, hey, it doesn't sound right, then it probably doesn't sound right. You just listen to the voice and surrender, and good things will happen.
Yes. And know you're not alone, either in the physical sense or in the, you know, there's a veil, right? We can't see the spirits and the souls and the guides. We can't see them, but they're all there to help if we just reach out and we ask for the help. So don't feel alone. That's the worst part.
Don't feel alone. How grateful we are for today's call, and how grateful we are for this beautiful space and so many good stories and reflections on today's call. Would like to have 1 minute of silence as a minute of gratitude, please. So 1 minute of silence to express our gratitude for this beautiful space that we have hold together. Thank you.